Is Eritrea almost single-handedly driving Europe's latest migration crisis? That's our discussion first up this morning. According to the English journalist David Blair, last year alone, 140,000 migrants crossed from North Africa to Italy, and he himself can't come to terms with the risk that takes place in this process. This is how he describes the ordeal in the London-based journal The Tablet. The disaster almost defies imagination. A crowded boat capsizes by night, casting hundreds of people into the Mediterranean, and among them are a huge percentage of able-bodied Eritreans who strain every nerve to flee their homeland every year. So, this is my question now, not his. Why their urgency? Well, today we'll try to take a closer look at this small East African country from where 4,000 people flee every month, and which I'm sure you remember dominated our headlines so much in the 80s and early 90s as a brave little country battling for its independence in a thoroughly honourable way. David Blair's also the chief foreign correspondent for the London Daily Telegraph, and he joins me from London via Skype. Welcome to the program, David.
Hi.
Look, there's no natural disaster and no civil war in Eritrea. Why then are they leaving the country in such large numbers?
Eritrea is probably the most repressive country in Africa, and what makes it unique is that virtually every adult is conscripted, either into the armed forces or to perform civilian labour of some kind or another. So just to give you one number, Eritrea's armed forces have about 320,000 personnel. The whole population of the whole country is only 6 million. So that's something like 5% of the entire population are in the army. So in Australian terms, it will be a bit like your armed forces having a million men.
So, in fact, in your writing, you said the best equivalent country is North Korea.
That's right. It's so heavily militarized that the nearest parallel really is with the North Korean regime. Eritrea and North Korea share the characteristic that their leaders keep the populations permanently mobilized for war. And the people of Eritrea are told that Ethiopia is a country that's bent on conquering the country and reversing its independence and reimposing its rule, in much the same way as the people of North Korea are told that South Korea is scheming to take over the whole peninsula.
Now, so Eritrea seceded from Ethiopia in 1993 after that long war of independence, which is so vivid in my mind. And what I find so poignant about this whole development that you're describing is that, am I not right in saying that in a way they massively garnered our sympathy? They were teaching their people, their guerrilla fighters, they had set up schools, they had a whole sort of social system operating as they continued to fight for their independence, quite unlike most other civil war protagonists. So what's gone wrong?
Yes, I mean, their struggle for independence was an epic, heroic struggle, which they waged for 30 years. And what makes it even more painful is that the leader of that struggle, Isaias Afwerki, is the man who's now president and who's now imposing this system of repression upon his people. And I think what's gone wrong is very clear. He realizes that unless he keeps his people permanently mobilized against outside forces, they will turn on him. So the problem is his own desire to hold power at whatever cost.
Has the Arab Spring played into this?
No, barely at all. There's been nothing like an Arab Spring.
But is he afraid of an Arab Spring?
Well, he's afraid. His fear of being overthrown predates the Arab Spring. I think it's very clear that the Eritrean economy is in long-term collapse. Unemployment in the private sector or outside the state sector is rife. And so the only way he can control the population is by turning his country into an African version of North Korea. And so quite understandably, anyone who can leave does leave. And people are prepared to run the most extraordinary risks in order to escape from Eritrea and reach Europe.
Has anybody whom you can discern made any plans to try to overthrow him?
Well, he thinks that everyone's trying to overthrow him. He tells his people that the Ethiopians are out to get him, the West is out to get him, the Arab monarchies of the Gulf are out to get him. The truth is no one's out to get him because Eritrea is a very small country. that actually has no great strategic importance. And no one in any powerful country is seriously suggesting regime change. So he's left on his own to rule pretty much as he wants. And the consequences of that are catastrophic for his own people.
Now, I noticed Joshua Keating, writing in Slate, said, the trouble is, it's a genuinely intractable problem that's now visiting itself in these terrible tragedies in the Mediterranean, but its crisis is also the world's. I mean, is this getting to a state where people, outside people, might start to say, we can't go on like this?
Europe is already reaching that position. The desperate tides of migrants are just unstoppable now. And these disasters, the most recent one being the most horrifying one, they're happening now with increasing frequency. But the truth is, there's very little that anyone can do because we can't take over Eritrea. We can't remove the president of Eritrea, even if we wanted to. There's no will to take any of those steps. And so the push factors that lead people to take these risks are going to remain.
You point out, too, that a couple of other issues are at play here. The civil war in Yemen has also resulted in Eritreans setting out by boat on the Mediterranean taking a very long route to get there. And also the chaos in Libya is playing a role.
That's right. Previously, a lot of Eritreans used to escape across the Red Sea, going first to Yemen, and then they would cross the border into Saudi Arabia, or they would try by other routes to reach the rich monarchies of the Gulf. So that was an alternative route, and it was a shorter route and a less risky route than trying to reach Europe. But that route is pretty much closed now because of the upsurge of fighting in Yemen. So if you're leaving Eritrea now, you've really only got one choice, and that's to try and go to Europe. And the journey is really extraordinary. I mean, people cross first into Sudan, then they head north and they cross the Sahara Desert, then they reach the Mediterranean shore, and then they embark upon these extraordinary voyages on tiny leaking rust buckets of ships, which may or may not reach the Italian coast. So these are really epic journeys. And now that's pretty much the only way in which, if you're an Eritrean, you have a chance of escaping.
So you can't see any change in this by the sound of you, David. You can't see any circuit breakers.
The only one is human mortality. Isaias will eventually, the president of Eritrea, will eventually disappear from the scene.
Oh, dear.
Human mortality in that context is a wonderful thing. So he will eventually go, and then Eritrea will have another chance. But until that moment comes, it's very hard to find any reasons for optimism.
All right, David. Well, look, somewhat depressing end, but I thank you very much for your time today.
That's fine. Thank you.
David Blair, who is chief foreign correspondent for the London Daily Telegraph, but also writes in the London Tablet magazine about, as I said, a truly intractable problem, it would seem. I hate bringing you stories like that, but there we are. That seems to be the case.